Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, the latest geek culture news, and whatever movies, TV, and other pop culture is on our radar for the week. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now, on with the show. All right, so we are talking about, first of all, want to say we're closing out September. We have one last event in September. That is the Magic the Gathering Kaladesh pre-release is on Sunday.
People be hyped.
It is crazy packed.
Yeah, the first session is effectively full, though we have some room for, what do you call it, like alternates or whatever?
Yeah, wiggle room. Sometimes people sign up, don't show up, it happens. So if you want to walk in and give it a shot, you can, but we can't guarantee a seat at this point.
Yeah, or if you want to call in advance and put your name as an alt.
And, of course, last weekend we had our International Batman Day.
Yeah, I hear that one went quite successful.
Went very well. We had a lot of people show up. Batman and Catwoman were here. Devin Kraft was here doing art. It was a lot of fun. The Batman guy was hilarious.
Yeah, he was great.
And Catwoman both were – they were great with the kids. They were really, really good.
That's awesome.
So that was a really fun time. And we're hoping to have those cosplayers out again for other events. The Batman also cosplays Deadpool. Catwoman also has like a Spider-Gwen.
Why don't they pick some popular characters? Those are practically unknowns.
It's true.
No, that's actually super cool.
And then coming up in October here, we've got three events. First of all, we have our Reading with Rogues. It'll be on Tuesday, October 11th. We'll be doing Batman Long Halloween and Harrow County Volume 1.
Yep.
It's our sort of Halloween.
Spooktacular reading.
Spooktacular reading. Yes, that's correct. And if you have a Rogue card, you get 25% off. If you don't, it's 15% off. This month, it's Long Halloween. Next month, it's Harrow County. Then we'll do our Gaming with Rogues in October 15th, Saturday, October 15th. And we're doing sort of a horror theme. Our official game, the one that you get 10% off if you're a Rogue Card member, is Dead of Winter, which is the co-op zombie game.
That everybody loves.
Yes. We will be setting that up. We might set up a game of the expansion if we have enough people who have played it. I've heard it's a little more complicated. So we want to get sort of veterans who have played Dead of Winter to play that one. We're also going to be having Pandemic Reign of Cthulhu, Cthulhu Flux. We're doing sort of a horror game that night.
Yeah, there are some awesome options.
And then finally, on October 29th, Saturday, October 29th, we will have our Halloween Comics Fest.
You know, I was looking at the selections this year, and there's some really good stuff in there.
Yep.
I know that they have both mini comics and regular size comics.
Yep.
And I think I was mainly looking at the regular size one, but they had, like, the Haunted Mansion.
Yep.
I think there was, like, they were an issue of Afterlife with Archie. I'm going to suddenly blank on all the others, but there was some good stuff in there.
There is. And the thing is, we will probably be a little lower on these numbers, much lower than we are in Free Comic Book Day, because this has not been a huge event for us in previous years. But we do have last year's stuff as well, and we'll have some other stuff to give away. So if you come in, you'll get some cool comics. You may not get exactly what was listed on the site, because we can't ever know how much of a supply we should get, but we should have some good stuff.
Something cool and spooktacular.
Yes. Spooktacular, the word of the day?
It is.
Okay. In spooktacular news, Stan Sakai has announced that Usagi Yojimbo will be making an appearance in the new TMNT cartoon.
That actually is pretty cool.
Yeah.
For those who have not been, you know, following Usagi Yojimbo over the years, A, you should follow it. It's great. Samurai Rabbit. It's steeped in Japanese history, but it's definitely its own storyline and kind of slightly, not fantasy take on it, but animal, otherworldly sort of take. I mean, it's still steeped in Japanese history.
But it does also have, like, supernatural elements, all from Japanese. It's as if feudal Japan and sort of the yokai and that kind of thing existed.
Yeah, exactly. But there is a history of Ninja Turtles crossing over with it.
Yep.
They've way back when I think it went from Fantagraphics to Mirage right before it went to Dark Horse. Mirage was home to the Ninja Turtles originally, so they did some issues in there. So the pair have met before, and I think it's really cool that a somewhat not obscure indie, but a smaller indie product, but a really with an amazing pedigree like Usagi. Is going to get it into the cartoon.
Yeah,
it's just fun.
I've actually never seen the original cartoons that had him in it, so I'm kind of curious to watch these episodes.
Oh, I forgot that they had done it previously.
Yeah, it crossed over with previous cartoons.
Just once, or like he was always hanging out with him and eating pizza?
I had the old Sagi Yojimbo actual action figure from the Ninja Turtles line.
Now, I remember actually buying that too when it came out, but did they just do it on a lark because they were just making toys of everything, or was he like in multiple episodes?
He might have been in multiple. He didn't show up at the end, and they were like all eating pizza together.
Yeah, he wasn't like, here is the lesson for today.
It wasn't like they're like, you know what? We need our samurai friend Usagi. Let's go get him.
He showed up in like two or three episodes.
That's what I was wondering. Yeah. Can we confirm more than one
episode? I believe it was always like a special guest appearance.
Right.
Yeah. There are also other weird development here, weirder development. Fox is making a 70s-era Stan Lee action pick.
That's the weirdest-sounding thing I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Although, it also has the potential to be weird cool.
Yeah.
So, Stan Lee, is this going to be, like, steeped in his biography?
I guess.
But heightened, maybe?
I assume.
Like, other publishers will try and put him out of business and they'll send assassins or something?
For all I know, Stan Lee was swinging through Europe fighting Nazis who had escaped the war in 1976. I don't really know.
You know, the interesting thing about them setting in that era, that is past his prime already. Because his big stuff was almost 60s. All in the 60s. That's when he created all the modern Marvel stuff we know. He did do stuff in the 70s, but he was less of a force for them. He was more like the publisher.
You know what, Dave? I smell prequel.
But I like the idea of two-fisted, mustachioed Stan Lee as a superhero publishing Doc Savage type.
I love the idea. Here's my question. Can Stan Lee have a cameo in the Stan Lee movie?
Yes.
So powerful are his cameoing skills.
Yes. It's true. You know, I feel like he'll be like some old-timer who gives advice to his young self. Or maybe he's even literally depicts his future self.
So they're gonna
and he's like, kid, I've been through a lot of crazy stuff, like fighting Nazis in Europe. He's like,
so go the Star Trek route.
Where it's old Spock. Do you think Stan Lee will time travel back from 2016 to warn Stan Lee of the 70s? Like, look, there's going to be a kid named Trump. You gotta strangle him in his crib. That's what the movie will be about.
I think they would tell him that he's gotta write comics that impart values like the X-Men did of tolerance and compassion to stop this a-hole. and Lord knows he tried. He did do that.
Yeah.
So clearly future Stan Lee did succeed in his mission.
Yeah.
It's we the people who failed.
It's a good lesson for all of us.
Yeah.
That would be the last page of a Stan Lee comic.
Yeah.
Stan Lee, by the way, does do great cameos.
By the way, I'm picturing Stan Lee doing the classic Spider-Man I'm quitting thing, throwing his clothes in a dumpster.
And he's walking away naked.
He's in his boxers. He's in his boxers in my vision. So
not Randy's, though.
No, he's naked.
Randy's,
it's funnier that way.
You see Stan's buttocks.
He has one of the funniest lines in Civil War, of course, where he comes in and calls him Tony Stank. So,
isn't he like Tony Stank?
Yeah. I love the notion of a world where Tony Stark is one of those biggest, most popular characters, but this dude has no idea who he is.
Yeah, it's just the name he can't really read on the envelope.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, finally, Star Wars, the next Star Wars arc, is going to deal with Yoda's past.
The Star Wars comic.
Yeah.
Not movies and stuff. Yeah, that's a pretty big change-up for him. It's been, like, the core heroes for the most part.
Yeah.
Does that mean that we're actually going to shift away from them as the lead characters?
Probably. I mean, you know, we've had those one-shots that are Ben Kenobi's past.
Yeah, it's true. And that has been when they've shown that all Ben, all the time.
I'm curious. So I guess we're going to go, like, pre-Clone Wars era, like, back to Yoda's youth, maybe, where he was fighting Nazis who escaped the war. Alongside Stan Lee.
And not using a cane.
Or, you know, the other thing, I mean, if they is the sort of post prequels, but like pre completely crazy hermit.
Yeah, that makes
lost years of Dagobah.
Sort of exactly what happens with Kenobi. That makes a lot of sense.
They must have done some of that on like Clone Wars Rebels, right?
I don't think so.
Because I assume that, like, you know, he did not just immediately leave and become full hermit.
You don't go full hermit right away?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Isn't that the point, though? When all the Jedi left, they became hermits?
Probably so. But, you know, I assume he was running some kind of Jedi Underground Railroad to ferry him to safety in the Outer Rim.
What if they all became hermits?
That would actually be kind of interesting. Something tells
you
me.
You talked over my lame 60s band joke, Dave.
But then I sung it. I sung Hermits style.
All right.
Do you want to repeat the joke?
No, I don't. No, Herman's Hermits. Okay,
but no, just real quick though. Do you think like if he did some sort of, like, he's helping Jedi get out to safe regions, or at least, you know, kind of the fringes of Star Wars universe. I think that'd be kind of cool
before
he goes into retirement.
He's, but even though, the one thing that drives me crazy about the Star Wars RPG and Star Wars, any kind of expanded universe stuff is, and even Rebels does it, is that the whole thing about Luke being the last Jedi and Leia being the last Jedi, that's supposed to be special.
Right.
But it turns out there's like 40 of them running around.
He needed to actually be the last Jedi. Right?
And you can't do that if you play in the universe at all, because everybody wants to be a Jedi. Everybody wants to be the last Jedi.
Right.
So
Luke
it is
the last known Jedi.
Yeah, okay.
That's different.
Not as cool.
That is different, yeah.
Yeah. If he's like, as that boy is our last hope. No, there is another. Plus, like, 38 more on other planets.
Yeah.
Not as cool.
Checklist I have.
I mean, Kanan was already not really a, you know, a Jedi.
Yeah, but
they've
Ezra
got
is.
Lightsabers.
Ezra's going to go evil.
Yeah, okay.
Quinlan Vos is half dead.
That's the other thing. There's all these evil Jedi showing up. There's, like, Inquisitors and all that. And they're like, there's only two. Plus those guys.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, they fudge the rules a little bit in Star Wars.
They do fudge the rules a little bit.
You know, rules.
It makes for good stories, I understand. Okay, we're not going to take a break because we just had sort of a light news week, and we're going to go right into comics so that we don't forget them like we did last week.
You know, last week was special. We did Batman Day.
Yes, we did.
It was a tie into Batman Day.
We did.
Also,
comics took the backseat.
When something as amazing as Batman the Animated Series was, it takes over a little
Sometimes
bit.
Sometimes it just steamrolls.
Sure. It's true.
Just like Hardak would have steamrolled all of us.
Yes.
Turned us all into robots.
What? Duplicates.
He may have, actually.
Duplicates.
I may be a duplicate.
Get it
never
right.
Know. I wouldn't even know.
You know who'd be so fanatical about the correct nomenclature?
What human?
A duplicant.
What human?
Get him!
All right. So we're going to talk about picks, and I'm going to start this week. I'm going to start with Amazing Spider-Man number 18, which... we're leading up to the Clone Conspiracy, which is about to come out, which Dan Slott is really pimping for on Twitter. He did a big campaign. He went on Bleeding Cool, and he said, listen, retailers, you've ordered too light on this.
Yeah.
So I took him at his word. I doubled our numbers. We'll see if he's right.
We'll say, like, the last time a creator kind of went out of their way at Marvel at that level to kind of push stuff was when Cap died.
It was the death of Captain America.
So that was during at Brubaker's run.
Yep.
So, you know, hopefully he ain't funning with us.
Yeah. But Dave has a crazy theory.
Are we going to say what the theory
is? I think you should say the crazy theory.
I mean, I want to get credit if it happens.
Yeah.
My crazy theory, the only, you know, we talked about, like, oh, could, like, who could be brought back?
Yeah, is it Uncle Ben? Is it Gwen Stacy? Right.
And none of them quite seem notable enough. And I'm wondering if they're using Spider-Man to stealth in the return of Wolverine, who has been dead in the Marvel Universe for, like, what, about 2-3 years
now? Yeah, about 3 years at least.
So they've sat on that one about the length that they usually do. Like, when Thor was gone, that was about that long.
Yep.
I'm trying to think. There was another one recently. So
Spider-Man.
It is a little... What's that?
Spider-Man.
With a superior Spider-Man taking over. Right?
Yeah.
He wasn't dead, but he was not in the body.
Yep.
So, you know, it would be a little bit weird because Wolverine is not a standard, he's not a staple of Spider-Man comics. But it would be something that would be big. The time is about right.
Yep.
So that's what I'm putting down for.
Yep. I think that'd be really interesting. I think it's a weird out of left field call, but Dave reserves the right to brag if that is correct.
Yep.
I'm going to quickly say the return of Hulk.
It's just right back. He's like,
yeah.
Right back.
Right back.
Yep. Okay, so Amazing Spider-Man, this issue is actually sort of a weird one. If you've been reading the Slott Spider-Mans, you know that the Living Brain robot has Doc Ock's thought patterns in it. You don't know how or why. This issue is all about revealing the wild. It sort of picks up from the last place we saw Spirit of Spider-Man in Spider-Verse and jumps back and shows how his brain patterns got in the Living Robot, which I thought was interesting. And it's all about the Living Robot and Doc Ock trying to figure out, not the living robot, living brain. Doc Ock basically trying to figure out how he's going to get back to his old life, how he's going to get Anna back. And
that's interesting. It's almost like it sounds like, in that sense, an epilogue to Superior Spider-Man.
It is, and it's sort of a spotlight on Doc Ock. And it is leading into the Dead No More story, just because that is what's going on. There's references to the Jackal sort of cloning operation that's going on.
If you squint at the cover, is Wolverine anywhere in it?
If you squint really hard and close your eyes and imagine, yes.
You got to run into the wall once or
yes.
twice.
Yeah.
But, you know, Superior Spider-Man ended up being so well-liked after all is said and done. Mm-hmm. I think that's not too crazy to revisit then.
You know,
obviously, you enjoyed it.
I think Superior Spider-Man, I did. I think Superior Spider-Man is a really good lesson for people. to maybe tone down the fan outrage on things a little bit.
Right.
Because things that we think are just anathema turn out to be okay.
Right. You might want to, and better than okay in that case.
Yeah.
You might want to let them see if they see what they can prove.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to be skeptical of DC, I understand that because they've burned me so many times. Yeah. But trust Marvel. That's all I'm saying.
Such a Marvel whore.
I am such a Marvel whore. Uh-huh. Dave?
I'm going to go with an Image whore this week in a book that I had no interest in prior to today.
In fact, you might even say negative interest. I think you assumed you were not going to like this.
Yeah, this is Image's Seven to Eternity, number one. That's Rick Remender's new book. I'm not a guy who generally follows his books. His he's generally done sci-fi stuff.
Low, Black Science, before that, Deadly Fear Class, Agent. Fear Agent.
Yeah. Every once in a while, he's written some stuff I liked at Marvel. I'm trying to think. Did he write, like, Uncanny Avengers and that Captain America run?
Yeah. He's had a really good run on Uncanny X-Force.
He tends to towards dark, depressive topics.
Yeah.
This was his attempt to do a fantasy world sort of setting. Definitely breaking from the tradition of, you know, elves and dwarves type stuff.
Oh, yeah.
More fantasy in that kind of exotic tradition of... I almost want to say something like Dark Crystal or something.
Is there's psionics instead of magic, right? Isn't it sort of living weapons and that
people,
kind of thing?
Yeah, people, they, like, can commune with the spirits and stuff like that. Yeah. And it's almost like... There's actually, like, no science in this world.
Okay.
I think he explains in the back, you can kind of either commune with the spirits or you can't.
Uh-huh.
And there may be varying degrees along the way.
You know, I don't know if you know this. I can commune with the spirits.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Do it.
I just did.
Well, it's... Didn't look like a lot.
They told me you're a dum-dum face.
Well, at least they kept their language in check. So on this world, they jump right into a story where, and I will be honest, there's stuff in here where I'm a little bit like, I don't know everything that's going on.
Yeah.
There's some future speak and some referencing things we have no understanding of.
You know, when you've been dropped in the world like, say, Dark Crystal or something like that, and you're figuring it all out, this is that first, you know, opening story part. But there is some things that are very clear, and one is that this family that it begins with is under a sort of a magical assault from one of the gods of their world, who's, it's almost like they sort of manipulate people in a way almost like politicians do in our world. They call this one the God of Whispers, and he...
That's a cool name, by the way.
It is a cool name. He is a literalized creature, though, not an abstraction. Like, they know where, like, he lives and stuff, you know.
Lives on Mount Olympus.
It's that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But instead of having to overtly tax himself taking down non-believers and stuff like that, he, you know, kind of seems to have an agent in every family, in every corner of the cities and stuff like that. And so his agents do his bidding. And early on, this family very much feels his wrath. And the son of the family decides to... there's cool magical battles going on. Weird monsters. He rides this awesome looking like wolf type creature.
The monsters are cool.
Yeah, they are. They're pretty exotic. They're larger than life, and the wolf thing is almost like, I think it's got like antlers and stuff. So it's weird.
So Pena on art, right? Jerome Pena.
Yeah, Jerome Pena, who worked with Remender on his X Force,
also Fear Agent,
Uncanny X Force run, and his Fear Agent run, and does a really he's got a sort of that. Elaborate European art style, something of that, where it's ideal for building fantasy worlds. He's a good artist for that kind of stuff.
Who's the colorist? Because the colors are really lush.
Matt Hollingsworth.
Okay. Oh, interesting. Hollingsworth usually a darker colorist.
But yeah, it looks like he maybe got to cut loose here. You know, there's this like boar that's like has this like a magic infection in the beginning that has these like almost, you know, rainbow tendrils of, like, you know, it sort of looks like spores attached to it.
Yeah.
You know, trailing rainbow tendrils. But anyway.
It's like a giant jellyfish to me.
Yeah.
Adhered itself to its skin.
But what happens is the son and the family, after the sort of tragedy that befalls them early on, decides to set out and pay a visit to this god. And he's got a few options in front of him, one of which, and the one that they're terrified of, is that he'll actually hear what the offer is and maybe fall under his sway. He's also considering killing him, which I know is, I think, the underpinnings of the series, is this tyrannical god.
You know, Dave, it almost feels, is there a bit of a sort of a Western blend in there? I saw one of the maps and there's...
Right, and even the way they talk has a little bit of it. So I feel like, in a weird way, Dark Tower fans, this might want to cross over, because that had elements of fantasy and a Western. But yeah, the way they talk, there's a little bit of sort of almost like Southernism into it. At the same time, there's almost that sort of, you know, Lord of the Rings-ish road trippy picture quality of like the Fellowship of the Ring as he's on his path there.
I was going to say
it goes along at a pretty good clip.
I was going to say him on his path to get to this king or whatever is a sort of an interesting look at the world itself and kind of the disastrous nature of it, but also
you get to tour it. You see some sort of rival factions, including some that hate his family.
But you also see some of like, you know, it's got a couple of moons and like floating islands and things like that. And it's just some really cool. You can tell thought was put into the panels. And
well, I don't know if you read the follow the afterword, Nick.
But it's really cool.
Yeah, his afterword to it is really interesting, and he says, since back when we were doing Fear Agent, we discussed the strange fantasy world where we could do whatever we wanted, a strange world we could explore along with the reader. Of course, doing whatever you want can feel frivolous, so we've been building this world's rules in order to enjoy some unfiltered imagination, but in a world that has logic to it. So this is not just a, hey, crazy magic stuff is going to be happening everywhere. You can tell that there's a sense of concrete things, there's factions, as much as Game of Thrones, just sort of more exotic than that is.
It doesn't feel haphazardly put together. It feels very much like they have like a set guide of rules and things that they're wanting to accomplish.
And I know that there's the Seven to Eternity is referring to the seven characters you'll see on the cover. I'm trying to think, Nick, are these all... They're not all his allies. Some of these are like his enemies and stuff, right? Or no, actually, that's his family in the lower portion.
The lower portion.
But there's like a floaty eye thing, and
those are more of like the king's followers or something.
But presumably, this is sort of in a way the team he's going to assemble. It looks like I think that's what it is. I guess we'll find out more as the series goes along. But I really like the first issue. Found myself drawn into this world, liking the characters, wanting to know more. And not having the... as somebody who likes fantasy, a lot of time I pick up fantasy comics or books, and the world-building stuff is just a block to me. I'm just like, okay, we get it. You filled up a bunch of notebooks with your ideas. You know, you're a DM for D&D, and you're just like, oh, here's how the gods are in my world. But they're not really that interesting. And here I found them quite interesting. So for fantasy fans, for Remender fans, for Dark Tower fans, definitely... one of the stronger recommendations I've had in a while. I think a lot of people are going to like this book.
Also, just something quick pointing out that it's really cool. I love it when writers do this. They do like a playlist of songs that they basically were listening to as they wrote it.
Yeah,
and I don't recognize a lot of these.
You can tell Remender's a hipster.
I know Ratatat and I know like Alt J, and that definitely fits in some of the.
But yeah, but I actually wanted to look it up. I imagine if you you can probably find him on Spotify or something. Did they happen to mention that? If nothing else, it's at least a list, but it'd be nice if it was all in one place.
But of course, they have things like on here, like Black Sabbath and Bad Religion and Radiohead. So.
Yeah, that makes sense. There's, you know, a combination of, like, I could see there's a sort of metal quality to this, but I could also see how the surrealness of Radiohead would fit in with it. So I definitely wanted to check out that playlist too, Nick.
I think if anything of what we just said sounds interesting, it's worth checking this book out.
Yep. What you got?
I am going to cheat a little bit because I want to talk about a story arc called Batman, Night of the Monster Men. Which
as far as cheats go, this isn't too crazy. It's not two cheats,
but it does span two issues tomorrow, and that is Batman number 7 and Nightwing number 5.
Yeah, this is sort of the first crossover of the Rebirth era, but it's going to be contained. It's only like one issue of each, or two issues of each, maybe?
I think it's just one issue of most of them. It may be two issues of Batman.
Okay.
That almost doesn't even count as a crossover. It's just it's linked books.
Yeah.
But it's not like you're going to have to go buy ten issues.
Right.
It's Batman, Nightwing, Detective Comics, and I forget what else it's crossing over in.
Is it Batgirl? It might be Batgirl,
but
I think she's off in Japan.
Randy, yeah, she's off in Japan. How they did the Spider-Man books back in, 90s, I guess? The Kraven's Last Hunt, it was just a six-issue thing. Although, I guess there it was still all...
They're all Spider-Man books.
Story. This is actually seeing these, at least through the eyes of different characters.
Yeah, Well, I mean, I will say right up front, this was damn good. It felt like an old school crossover in a lot of ways. Just
so not disappointing.
No, not disappointing at all. In fact, we're sort of given a new type of monster, essentially, of what is what they are. But there is definitely someone behind it. Someone
like magic monsters, genetic hybrid monsters.
Basically dead bodies that have been reanimated, but reanimated in such a way that they're sort of like childlike but monstrous.
Frankenstein?
Yeah, a little bit Frankenstein, flipping. But they also like transform into other, like, there's like
through,
a dragon.
I was seeing
thing.
A little bit of influence. A dragon? Wait.
There is like a kind of wyvern,
I mean,
dragon.
I always assume that like Silent Hill and The Thing and stuff influenced this kind of thing.
It definitely, I think there's like four or five different monsters that they're going to have to face, and I think each one is going to be sort of
like singular
different.
Monsters? Yeah. Or, okay, not like a species of
correct.
Monster.
Correct. It's okay. Just singular monsters.
And I don't know if we've said it, but this is a big time update of what was one of the earliest stories in Batman comics, like in the 40s.
Yeah, Batman and Monster Man,
Hugo Strange was the guy who built the Monster Man originally.
And I mean, it's not spoiling too much. It's on the first page. It's Hugo Strange again.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. This is sort of a
the mad scientist of the Batman verse.
This is the kind of thing they did in Post Crisis too, where they take classic stories and sort of update them. So it's sort of an homage back to even to Post Crisis stuff, where they're doing the rebirth version of a story that's classic.
Right.
And I really do think it's an interesting because it is this Batman issue is written by Tom King. This issue of Nightwing is written by Tim Seeley, but they're working in conjunction with Steve Orlando, who is, like, headlining the entire story.
Okay.
So they're working together, and because of that, it feels much more cohesive. Because basically where Batman ends, it immediately picks up with
Nightwing.
Right,
you don't feel like you stepped into completely new territory just because the writer changed.
No. And also, I really feel like, and they're putting some interesting spins. Batman's in a bad place right now. I mean, if you've read Detective Comics from last week, you kind of know what I mean.
Yep.
He's dealing with some heavy stuff.
He's being very protective of his family at the moment, which of course means he's putting himself in the fray of everything, so going toe-to-toe with these monsters himself.
Right, he's being, like, self-destructive, maybe.
And of course some of his family members are not, you know, really gonna, you know, for that.
Nick, you told me about something interesting, which is that, is this taking place as a hurricane is slamming into
Gotham? Yeah, and it's also because a hurricane is hitting Gotham, which is really interesting.
You can't win in Gotham.
No. Gotham is a horrible place
to be. Oh no, it's a hurricane, I'm gonna have to lock my windows, and oh, there's a monster outside.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there's also some cool stuff integrating it into the DC universe. Batman references Steel, or John Henry... John Henry Steel.
Irons. Yeah.
Yeah, John Henry Irons. There's some.
Yeah, sometimes they have, you know, Gotham kind of isolated off, like almost like it's really not part of the DC universe. And I do like when they kind of remember Batman is part of a bigger tapestry.
Yeah. And they're using all of the crew of Detective Comics in here, so it is pretty much everybody. I don't know. It just
feels.
You
want to quick mention the artist in there?
Yeah, the art in here is Riley Rosmo, which he did
Proof. Then Rasputin.
I never remember Proof. Yeah, and Rasputin.
And then more recently, is he the guy drawing Constantine?
He worked on Constantine.
Yeah, and I've come to really like his artwork. He has that kind of angular style.
Well, he gives a great look to all the monsters. Sort of how we always say, like, Guy Davis can draw monsters like crazy. There's some great design work in just the insane... angular and kind of creatures that he's doing. And then in the second one, it's an artist I actually didn't recognize, Roge Antonio, but I love the sort of clean line kind of animated looking. I mean, there's some detail in here, but it's just really fun.
Yeah, it's nice looking. That actually is a little Cliff Chang-y, maybe.
Yeah,
I can see that.
But all of Gotham is being used. You see Gordon, Harvey Bullock is in here, Stephanie Brown. It just feels like one of those good old-fashioned...
Well, that reminds
like,
me of, like,
No Man's Land,
but, like, on not necessarily on that scale of, like, brace yourself for a year of this, but it's got some of that, because of the natural disaster quality that's going on with the hurricane, there is a little bit of that.
Yeah, and I also want to say, Tom King and everyone involved uses Alfred to some of the best things, because Alfred is kind of like the go-to guy. If you need something solved, Batman usually relies on him.
Need somebody to shoot down a Batmobile with a missile?
You know, something for every occasion.
That story is unfolding.
No,
he probably had a good reason.
I'm just saying, this is a great start to this crossover. So nice. I'm excited to see
that,
where it goes.
That bodes well.
Yeah.
Randy, are we on to...
Yeah, backup picks. Nick, what's your backup pick?
Sure, I'm going to pick another...
Even though you already picked two because you're a big cheater.
I am a big cheater. So I'll pick a third one. Ha!
What are you pick do? A third and a fourth.
I can pick a fourth, I'm sure.
Well, you're picking a third, which is sort of appropriate.
Yes. No,
appropriate because
it's a
the
Trinity,
comic is
yes.
Trinity. Yes. Trinity number one hits tomorrow. This is the new book by Francis Manapul.
That's his DC's book. Trinity, correct. Not the Trinity you might otherwise think of.
You mean from The Matrix?
Yes.
I don't think anybody was thinking it was Trinity from The Matrix. No, but this is Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman. Francis Manapul, who is an amazing artist, who's worked on The Flash.
He launched The Flash with New 52, and probably most people know him for that.
Yeah, and then he did Detective Comics.
Right.
Right. But this is sort of him doing a book just about these three characters meeting and sort of the...
How and their that lives, art is good.
Oh, God, it is. How their lives intertwine. Especially because the Superman is the Superman from the previous universe.
Right. He's new into this world.
And they don't know
Diana
him.
Diana and Bruce don't know him. So Lois gets them to come to dinner and sort of kind of rehash out things and sort of get to know each other because they don't. I mean, they have, you know, qualities that, you know...
Do they know each other's these other secret identities?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, they established that pretty
quick. It'd be funny if Superman was like, I know from my world your identities, but does me of this world know your identities? Because I can pretend not to.
Well, they knew the whole that Superman and Diana were romantically involved, and that issue is brought up.
Don't mean she knows he's Clark.
That issue is brought up
here
with Lois.
Secrets.
Lois brings up that issue.
Yeah.
There's some fun stuff about secret identities with the new Superman, or with Superman and his son.
Right. He's definitely a different person now because of his fatherhood.
Yeah. And they're just on the farm in Smallville, or well, on a farm. Their farm. It's not Smallville, I don't think.
No, I don't think so either.
But there's
he's
a talk
trying
of like
to, he's generally kind of keeping his family under the radar, so
yeah.
They're probably not hanging out at
but
any
there's
usual.
Talk of like Batman's past and what he's done to sort of protect Robin in the same way that Superman is protecting his son.
Wonder Woman's like, I ain't got no kids.
It's true. Wonder Woman doesn't have any kids. But she is going through her own problems at the moment. If you've been reading Greg Rucka's Wonder Woman, and sort of, she's kind of torn apart from all of her history.
Right.
She doesn't know what's true, what's lie.
Right.
So she's sort of kind of adrift.
So they might, they're actually kind of a stabilizing influence for each other right now? Or?
I mean, that's sort of what this is. It's all about sort of finding each other while finding themselves. So, and then there's some stuff towards the end, which will definitely lead into some bigger stuff. So I thought it was a great issue.
Dave, sorry.
I was just going to say, yeah, that's right, Trinity doesn't have a rebirth special. It just jumps right in because it's a new book.
It's like...
They don't need a transition handoff book.
Is it? Yeah, it's just a regular first issue.
Yeah, it's just a regular first issue.
By the way, just an aside, if you were to do a story about the biblical Trinity fighting crime, I'd read that book. The Holy Ghost could, like, phase through walls.
Right, they have different powers.
Yeah.
Healing powers, phasing powers,
lightning
bolt throwing powers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd read that.
Am I doing mine?
Yeah, what's your backup pick?
All right, my backup pick is, Valiant's been on kind of a bit of a run lately.
Yeah.
Faith has been great. What's the new Generation
Zero? Generation Zero?
Generation Zero was good. I don't know if I picked that as my pick, but it was certainly a potential pick for me that week.
Yeah.
And here comes maybe the strangest one I've read from them, Britannia. The Britannia, as in like ancient Britain.
I'm not even sure this is in the Valiant shared universe.
Right, it feels like it could be completely its own thing.
Because like the Eternal Warrior doesn't show up. There's no reference to Syats. There's no reference to
this. May be Valiant expanding what they do.
Yeah,
yeah, and that to me would be very cool. I kind of would like this to be free of it because as it is, it's a kind of a dark historical mystery and like horror story at time. I should quick say the writer is Peter Milligan, who's a UK writer known for some of his dark early Vertigo stuff, Shade the Changing Man, among others. He's done stuff for Avatar more recently, and this actually has the art a common Avatar artist, Juan Jose Rip, who worked on stuff with Warren Ellis and also Alan Moore. He's good at drawing gory stuff sometimes, and this has some offerings in that.
He's not the guy who did Providence, not Providence, but the other one.
Is that Jason Burroughs?
Yeah, it's Jason Burroughs.
Yeah, okay. I might be mixing him up. I might have said Alan Moore mistakenly. I take it back. Anyway, the story is set in the year 60 AD. They set up real quick. They say Nero's been emperor for 6 years, and he's actually a major character.
He's
all over the place. But our sort of lead is this Roman centurion who ends up falling under the sway of the cult of the Vestal Virgins.
Mm-hmm.
And they mention early on that, you know, in general, women have little to no power in ancient Rome, with the exception of this cult, which actually has huge power.
Because the flame of Vesta that they tend to, if it goes out, Rome will fall. That's the story.
Right. And so that's they have huge political power, but it's almost like they can't kind of push it too much.
Right.
They still have to recognize that there are limits to what they can demand, mm-hmm. but those limits are pretty high. And early on, they call on this one centurion to rescue one of their own, and it sends him into this kind of supernatural situation where there's like a cult and a monster resurrection that's kind of like Lovecraftian.
Yeah, I was going to say there's definitely a Lovecraftian, like it breaks his mind.
Yeah, yeah. And then the book, at no point in reading this did I was like, oh, I expected it would go this direction.
Yeah.
The Vestal Virgins are the, like, central characters. If this were a Green Lantern book, they'd be the Guardians.
Yeah.
You know, they're, like, the sending him out on the missions and stuff.
Yeah.
Only I'm finding their politicking more interesting than the Guardians.
Yeah.
Nero is a central character. He's, you know, kind of trying to keep their power in check.
He's venal and corrupt.
And then you have this PTSD Roman centurion that they start calling a detectioner?
Yeah, they send him out to do, like, basically detective work.
Yeah. And that reminded me, actually, there's a series of mystery novels by Stephen Saylor, I think. He's, like, an Austin local who does mystery set in ancient Rome.
Hmm.
And I forget what they call I think it's like Gordanus the Finder or something like that, but it's clear he's a detective.
Okay.
So, but it's a different bit from this because this is definitely all over the place with supernatural mystery. This guy is off sneaking into brothels to get information from Roman senators. There's an R-rated vibe to this, even if it's not strictly R-rated.
It's probably the edge of PG-13. Like, there's not any real nudity shown.
But it's real close.
It's real close.
Nero's in it.
Yeah.
Just, you know, he's not Caligula, I know, but he's up there.
Yeah.
And definitely, specifically the title Britannia comes from the fact that there's a major interest in these sort of the druidic religions that are mysterious down there, that they may be behind these kind of supernatural, dark supernatural doings.
Mm-hmm.
And indeed, our centurion finds himself headed there, and it's a creepy, you know, misty place, you know, like real Britain.
Sure.
But foggy
and full of demons.
Right. And I will say, like, the demons in this are not like demons with horns and stuff. It is Lovecraftian in nature, and if not explicitly, definitely implicitly. And so I feel like horror fans are going to want to check this out, and also just somebody looking for it's a smart book.
Yeah.
Like, these are well-rounded characters. Nobody gets short shrift. Antonius, I think, is the lead guy.
Yeah.
The Vestal Virgins, Nero, they're all interesting and deep characters. And the mystery is interesting. At no point are you going to feel like you've read this all before. So for sure, check it out. I think it could be the start of something particularly unique from Valiant.
All right, my backup pick is another Marvel book because I'm a Marvel whore. And that book is All New Wolverine number 12.
You always be picking this book.
I love this book. It's so good.
You know what that means is, what's his name? Who's the writer?
Tom Taylor.
Tom Taylor has emerged as a really notable writer in the last three years.
Well, because he did Injustice, and now he's doing this. And Ig Guara is the artist and is really good. And this is basically fallout from Civil War, although you don't need to be reading Civil War. That was just sort of the start point where something has happened that has set Laura against her former mentor, or so we thought, Old Man Logan, and it's all about sort of the confrontation between the two of them, And it's a big Wolverines fight. Oh. S.H.I.E.L.D. is involved. Captain America is involved. And it is sort of the...
You know, I know X-23 is tough, but going up against Old Man Logan, like the most experienced Wolverine yep. there is...
And he's in a sort of his dangerous. He's in sort of his berserk state, so... Yeah it's a good little throwdown. But yeah, if you've been... It's a really good finale. This is probably not the best jumping on point for it. If right. you've been reading it, it's a good finale, too.
On the other hand, if somebody's looking for some hardcore action, it might be good.
And the next issue is going to start their Enemy of the State story, which will be interesting. They're going to do a Enemy of the State 2, basically, with... Starring.
Right, which was a pretty strong storyline yep. from Mark Miller some years yep. ago.
So the rest of my stuff, a lot of Civil War stuff. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. number 9. I've been really digging this book. They put Elektra in charge of this sort of special unit now that Phil Coulson's on the run. So this is sort of a Civil War within S.H.I.E.L.D. as Phil Coulson's unit is divided into teams. Wait, and
S.H.I.E.L.D. put Elektra in charge of something?
Yeah.
Well, what has she done to prove herself?
I don't know.
Okay.
They definitely mention.
I mean, I'm interested in the notion. I'm just like, you know, she's killed a lot of innocent people. Right?
Oh, she's killed Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. They bring that up in here notably because during the Enemy of the State story, she crashed a helicarrier.
Oh, wow.
She was like an agent of the
Hitler. That's an interesting and specific yeah. callback.
But remember,
cool.
she was mind controlled. And so this is her sort of seeking redemption. She's kind of, everybody hates her. She's the
You know, when everybody hates me, I try and use the mind control excuse and yep. it gets me nowhere.
Yeah, I know. You know why? We know you've been mind controlled. You know that's not true. Also, a Civil War story, Power Man and Iron Fist number 8. Really love this book. It's more of sort of Danny's in jail. Luke Cage is kind of frustrated trying to figure out what to do about it. And leads up to this great final scene. Fantastic art in here by Sanford Green and Flaviano.
While you're mentioning that, Randy, I'll just quick throw out that the Power Man and Iron Fist, the first collection by that same team,
yep.
Hits this week. I've been looking forward to it since I missed some of the early issues, but I've really fallen into loving the series lately, so I'm for sure picking that one up.
And I've been reading it since the outset and can promise people it's really great.
All right, hipster. All right, pray continue.
And Civil War X-Men number 4 concludes with Magneto and kind of a surprise turn of events. Then Vote Loki number 4, which, by the way, I'm still kind of shocked that Marvel published this book. It is...
How so?
It is basically Loki running as a third-party candidate. It is doing a lot of sort of criticism, and it's subtle criticism of both the presidential politics and Donald Trump.
But not
and,
toothless.
And third-party candidates.
Yeah.
And yet at the same time, it's a fun story about Loki and this disgraced reporter who's trying to tell everybody about the truth about him. It's a fun little story. I was not expecting... That's what I funny. Got out of it.
Is the only person you can trust the God of Lies?
Yes. That was, I think, one of his pitches.
Yeah.
That's my stack for the week. Dave, what else you got?
Let's see. There's a new issue of Archie this week, Archie number 12. DC has the first issue of ongoing series? No, six-issue miniseries of the popular Teen Titan Raven. Flipping through this, it actually looked pretty decent. The writer is Paul Levitz, who's, you know, definitely a kind of Bronze Age writer.
Oh, I thought it was Marv Wolfman.
I misspoke. Marv Wolfman. We were talking about him both earlier.
You really can't tell the two of them apart.
Nah. Marv Wolfman, who you may remember from basically creating the popularity of the entire new Teen Titans, writes that. Here's an odd one. Street Fighter Swimsuit Special. Just got to mention it. you know, like the old Marvel swimsuit specials of old, there's tongue firmly planted in cheek. So there's lots of hot guys and gals in there, of course. But some of the fun stuff is like Sakura burying E. Honda in sand and making a mermaid tail out of sand on the surface. Let's see. We've surely mentioned this.
We have not.
Okay. Well, we should probably mention the long-delayed Civil War II number 5 is out this week.
Yep.
And it's the big throwdown issue.
It is.
It's for sure. It's the airport fight issue. It's the big one.
The Civil
it's
War
not
is
literally the airport fight, but it's that kind.
The Civil War has actually happened.
Yes. And the last thing I wanted to mention was a special for the younger kids. DC Superhero Girls is a line that's proven really popular at our store. Mm-hmm. I guess they got cartoons and toys and stuff
yep.
too, right?
Yep.
And I've noticed lately a lot of kids coming and looking for this and parents asking for more. Well, there's another one, this new one this week, that's the Superhero High School Yearbook. And this is essentially a kind of a who's who book. It's an encyclopedia. You know, it's written for kids, so these are not like the long-ass Marvel Universe entries or like a super long Wikipedia entry. But it does have where all the student versions of all these DC characters, where they came from, what their powers are. what their favorite food is, which I'm just going to go ahead and give you an example. The Ravager, you know, Deathstroke's daughter, favorite food, kimchi tacos with green apple shavings and sweet peppers. That actually sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
Interestingly, they mentioned her fashion sense, bold and dramatic. there's also like little quotes. It is done in the style of a yearbook, so there's quotes from each of the characters. There's a section in the middle of photos of them throughout the school year. I mean, it's really fun. They're having a fun time playing with the universe. I've always liked the notion of sort of transplanting superheroes into a school setting and just rethinking everything.
Yeah.
And it looks like they're doing a good job of it. That's my stuff. Nick, you got any others?
I just had a few more to throw on there. So the seventh issue of Superman, which is sort of a day off spending time with family. But there's also a great sort of intro with him sort of making the rounds, like what his typical rounds of the world are. And he, like, visits Gotham, Central City, London, South Pacific, and sort of helping out where he can. And all the league's members are sort of, like, thanking him in a way. And it's just it's a very fun little moment.
He should grab a burger everywhere he goes. Just like
he probably does. Then the first issue of Cyborg, which I haven't had a chance to read yet, but I want to because I really liked what the Rebirth issue put out. And then the ninth issue of I Hate Fairyland, which is Gertrude exploring the depths of her Hat of Holding in search of a item that she's having a hard time finding because she hasn't been in her Hat of Holding in years.
That seems like a good premise for an issue, I have to say.
Yeah, yep. It was great. A lot of fun.
Hat of Holding.
There's a lot of fun to be had. There's even an aliens joke in there. So I was pretty pleased with what Scotty Young has been doing with that book. But that is all I got.
All right. That will take care of Comics of the Week. We'll be back in just a second to catch up on our long-neglected topics. Okay, well, we have neglected the topics that we've been wanting to talk about for a few weeks.
Thanks a lot, Batman Animated Series.
We've been more longer than that. It's just been busy weeks. And so we've been holding on to some stuff. And I thought we would just talk about them. And so first off, I want to talk about is a new game that I played, one that's in our demo library for you members, called Here Kitty Kitty.
Yeah.
In which 2 to 6 players get little house cards that have a porch, a house, and a yard.
Yep.
And you basically, there's little plastic cats, and that's all the cats in the neighborhood. You try to bring the cats from the neighborhood to your yard, then into your house, or then into your porch, and then into your yard, into your house.
This is weirdly similar to the premise of the popular app Neko Itsume.
At the end of the game, you want to be the one who has the most cats, but you also want, like, if all the cats in your house are the same color, you get bonus. If you have cats of all 4 colors in throughout your, like, throughout the house, you get points.
It's a little bit like Sushi...
Yeah, it's like Sushi Go.
Far as, like, it seems like there's a few different methods of scoring and...
But with adorable plastic cats.
Adorable plastic
cats. And also there's little cards you can put down. So, like, there's a card called the Kitten Adoption where you put it in your house and there are 2 cats and basically there's no way... They're foster kittens.
Uh-huh.
And no one can steal those cats from you with any card except for an adoption card.
Adorable.
There's also one. There's like one that you go and there's a catnip card. There's a card where you.
By the way, you can't even be mad if somebody steals your cat if they adopt.
I know. See, that's tricky.
Like, be like, I'm not even mad, bro.
There's also like a cat burglar that lets you steal a cat out of somebody's house unless they have the alarm card going. it's really fun and I had a great time playing it. It's a good game. You can play with kids. You can play with adults. It's definitely worth a look. And it's made by Austin Local Games, Fireside Games, the guys who did Castle Panic.
Oh, yeah. I love those guys.
Yeah. So
What's the sort of – you said it's kid-friendly?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Cool.
Yeah. Then I wanted to divert a little bit to a book I've been reading. I've been really bad about my book reading this year, but I did make time for a book about television.
Yeah.
That book is Alan Sepinwall and Matt Zoller Seitz, who were the
– Alan Sepinwall and who?
Matt Zoller Seitz.
That's just a string of crazy fantasy syllables.
They were the two guys. They were at the New Jersey Star Ledger for a long time. They were the 2 TV critics. They sort of came up on the Sopranos beat together.
Uh-huh.
And Zoller Seitz seems to be more of a guy like the classic TV a little more, whereas Sepinwall is more along with my prestige TV.
Sepinwall's like, I love Lost, and the other guy's like, I love All in the Family.
Yeah. Sepinwall has more of that sort of prestige TV fondness that I have, so his recommendations are better for me, but they went through and they sort of did a numerical score and they debated and they came up with a book that's about the top 100 shows of all time, sort of a history of TV. There's an essay on each show. It's broken down by first the top five, then like the next down to 50, and then the last 50. And like I said, there's essays for all of them. And then they sort of cheated by throwing in shows that were unfinished that they thought might rise the pantheon, and just et cetera, where they talked about their shows they liked. If you're a fan of TV at all, it's a great history. It's a great rundown. You will learn things that you did not know, and it will give you an appreciation for stuff that you may not know that well, like I Love Lucy or MASH or Taxi, and some of these 60s and 70s shows that were really formative.
Do they have a good fondness for Taxi?
Absolutely.
Because that one is way up there for me.
Yeah. Their top five, I won't say which one they decide on, but it was interesting because their top five, the ones that they sort of opened the book with a long sort of chat conversation they were having where they were trying to convince each other numerically, these five shows had all tied for the top spot.
Uh-huh.
So they were sort of, now it was sort of a push for, well, which one do we think is really the number one spot?
Right.
And it was between, obviously, The Sopranos, The Wire, Breaking Bad, and then The Simpsons and Cheers were the top five contenders.
Two comedies, three dramas.
Yeah. And it was interesting to see that debate. It's a really great book. I highly, highly recommend it.
Firefly on their list?
Firefly is on the list.
Just checking, I'm curious.
You know what else made the top 100? My beloved Terriers.
Oh, yeah?
It's there near the end, but it made it in. I'm not surprised because Sepp Moll is the guy who loved Terriers as much as I did.
Scraping the bottom of the barrel.
Ah.
But out of curiosity, I know I've asked this before. Did Terriers have a sort of resolve for a season, or does it have something unfinished?
Oh, absolutely resolved for a season. It's a complete story.
Cool. That's very awesome.
Which you would know if you'd go ahead and watch Terriers.
I'm getting at it.
I'm doing a rewatch right now.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Cool.
Nick's watching for me.
That's not how it works. It's not how any of this works.
I watched the first episode yesterday. I'm going to listen to your podcast.
Oh, cool.
And I'm going to do that for all, like I did. Started out for West Wing.
West Wing Weekly got a little. I got a little behind too.
I mean, I'm going to go back to it. I love listening to those guys. So
yeah, me too. I'm actually up. I'm up on like West Wing number 19, I think, but I haven't listened to the episodes past like 12, so I'm a little behind. Nick, I know you and I both watched FX's new shows.
I've only seen the pilot. I know you've seen two. Have you watched?
You talking about Atlanta?
Atlanta.
Yes, I've seen the pilot and the first two episodes.
Okay,
that's Donald Glover's new show.
Yes.
Yeah, this is Donald Glover. He writes and directs it, right?
Writes, and I don't know if he directs. He's heavily involved. He's the star. Yeah. He's one of the writers. And here's the interesting thing. This is a show that is in almost entirely black production team.
Yeah.
And it is about a guy named Earn who is dropped out of Princeton. He lives in Atlanta with his baby mama and their daughter. There's an interesting relationship between the two of them where she's dating other people.
Yeah.
And she clearly is just fed up with his crap. We don't see the whole backstory. We're just dropped into the middle of it.
Yeah, which I kind of liked. It was an interesting way to do it.
Yeah, and his cousin is a locally popular rapper called Paperboy.
Yep.
And Earn is kind of wanting to be his manager. And it's about sort of the world of hip-hop, Atlanta hip-hop, which is a different culture. And sort of living, getting by when you're not quite poor, but not definitely not middle class either.
Yeah, I think one of the best scenes for me in the pilot was his relationship with his parents.
Yeah.
And sort of how...
One of them is played by Clay Davis from The Wire, by the way.
Yeah, and how they loved him. They do.
But they won't let him in the house because they don't want him to ask for money.
Yeah, they don't want to give him any more money.
That's pretty good.
And it's just this kind of...
What's the overall tone again?
It's drama plus comedy. It's definitely FX tone, I would say.
Okay. Yeah, it kind of walks that line between the two genres, and I think it walks it
hour long
really
or half hour?
Half hour.
Okay, so...
I was just impressed with it.
Long story short, that's a comedy.
It's been getting a ton of critical acclaim. It's a comedy the same way Louis is a comedy.
Yeah, yeah.
Where there are full episodes of Louis where you don't laugh.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I think Donald Glover, I mean, for
is
me...
Is this like the show that he's been born to make?
I think so. This is great. It's so good.
For me, Donald Glover was always Troy from Community.
Yeah.
And I think that's where I first saw him, so I don't know of any other way. I think that was perfect. This is a different side, and I think it's great. I haven't listened to his Childish Gambino stuff either.
I've listened to it, and it's fun. The thing he did Mission to Mars, not Mission to Mars, The Martian.
The Martian.
He was in
that
there.
He kind of plays kind of what?
He's kind of larger than life, science geek.
Yeah,
right?
Larger than life. Always kind of on a sugar high.
But he wasn't just playing Troy.
He
definitely
was
playing a different version, and this. Urn feels closer to that. He's like a little bit more. He's a little out there, but he's also sort of a guy who's just trying to figure life out.
Yeah. Well, I'm anxious to see the other two. I just haven't had a chance, but I have not made it a point to watch it.
This is getting a ton of critical acclaim. A lot of people are calling it best new show of the season. It's definitely in the running for that. It's really, really good. And on the same night, not the same exact night, but the same. No, it's not actually. It's on Thursday, isn't it?
Yeah.
On Thursday is an FXX?
Or is it FX?
Okay. Better Things.
Right.
Which is Pamela Adlon. This is all the Louis C.K. crew. It's yes. Louis C.K. is behind the scenes. He's producing.
Yep.
And Blair Breard, Dave Becky, all the people who made Louis.
Yeah.
But Pamela Adlon is the lead, and she's starring as a single mom, an actress with...
It's very much her life, I think.
Three daughters?
Three daughters.
And she's trying to be an actress as she gets a little older and dealing with sort of the beauty-obsessed culture of Hollywood.
Yep.
And also trying to be a mom to these three kids. And it really is the female Louis.
Yeah, there's two episodes out so far.
I've only seen the first one. The second one is not up on FX Now yet.
Oh, it's not? The first episode is very vignette-ish in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I have not watched a lot of Louis, so I can't really compare.
It feels like some of the episodes of Louis.
But it's sort of introducing the characters. So you get her, you get her kids. And the second one, there's a bit more to it. There's an actual story for the full 22 minutes, or 23 minutes, however long the episode is. And, there's some great moments with their mother that shows up, who's... I don't want to spoil who it is. It's a fantastic reveal, though. And it's just hilarious.
Yeah, and it's also... It's a comedy that's got a heart of melancholy, just like Louis does, just like a lot of the shows I like. It's definitely a comedy.
It is.
But it also has some truths. The first episode opens with some parent shaming, which is such a thing that happens, and it's so funny and so real.
Parent shaming in what sense? Like, you do what with your kids?
Her kid is throwing a fit. She's crying her eyes out. And this other mom is sitting on the bench just staring daggers at her.
Yeah.
And she looks... She's on her phone. She's ignoring her.
Yeah.
And she looks over and she just basically says to this woman, she's like, do you want to buy her the earrings? Because that's why she's crying. Because I wouldn't buy her some earrings. Earrings she already has at home, but she wants to wear them right now. And so I told her we're not buying those because we already have them. And that's why she's crying. Dude, you should go there. It's in that store right there. You can go do it. Uh-huh. Otherwise, quit staring at me. And it was great.
Yeah. And it's more of that same stuff.
Yeah.
It's just funny. And I didn't know that Pamela Adlon had done something like voice acting for kids shows.
She was the voice of Bobby Hill.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so they're
which I have to say, one of the great voices, actually. It's a great
voice. But she did voices for Rugrats and a bunch of other things.
Which they reference because she does voice work as an actress here. Yeah. Yeah, this is definitely semi-autobiographical.
It is. And I look forward to this show because it is sort of real life.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of sad but kind of funny, and you kind of have to look at it in even the dark moments with a little bit of humor.
Nick, have you looked at much at the stuff that's coming up in the fall?
I have.
So do you have any? I have three favorites I want to mention that look good to me.
Okay, good.
So NBC is killing it. I don't know what happened at NBC.
All right.
Everything I want to see this season I think is on NBC. There's The Good Place, which is by the creators of Parks and Rec. It has Ted Danson and Kristen Bell, and it's basically that the premise is The Good Place is like heaven. Kristen Bell's character dies. She goes to The Good Place. She is assigned a roommate who is her soulmate, who is like this guy who's a professor of ethics. And she got there because she did all this charity work. She got people off death row as a lawyer. And the twist, of course, is that they got the wrong person. Same name, different person. And she actually probably should have been going to the bad place. And Ted Danson is sort of new, and he's the head of this neighborhood in The Good Place, and he's sort of a new god entity type guy.
Right.
And it's very funny. So the trailers look really good.
Nice to have a new venue for Ted Danson to do his thing.
Yeah, and the reviews have been good, and it looks like a blast.
It's on my DVR, definitely.
I'm watching it tonight on Hulu. Yeah. I'm really excited about it. The other one, This Is Us. Did you see the trailer for this?
I have seen the trailer. It looks really, really good.
It's one of those things that could be easily maudlin. It's about, you know, it's a mom and dad or a husband and wife, and they go into the hospital for birth their triplets. And there's some other families, and there's some kind of connection between them all. We don't know what it is. They all have the same birthday, but there's some other kind of connection between all these people. It looks very parenthoodish or that kind of thing. But some of that stuff can seem a little maudlin to me. I actually found it very affecting and also kind of funny, and I'm really interested to see where it goes. It's got a big film guy behind it. It's sort of indie
right,
movies.
But it also is like, what's the actor name? Milo Ventimiglia
and Mandy Moore,
yeah,
of all people.
Which I think is interesting.
The dude from Heroes?
It is.
Yeah. So this is not something that I thought would appeal to me, but the trailer is really strong. I'm looking forward to that. And then the other one is Timeless, which is a...
I was curious about this one.
So this is a time travel show. They have a secret time machine. They're going back. Someone is going around messing with time. Like the first episode, they have to go back and stop or deal with the Hindenburg because it looks like someone is trying to save the Hindenburg in a way that will destroy the time or mess with the timeline. So they send back these people, and one of them is Abigail Spencer, who was on Rectify, and she's fantastic. The other one played Lem on that show,
The Shield.
No. The science. He was the scientist Lem on the comedy with the corporation. Better off Ted.
Better off Ted. Okay.
He said back, and there's a funny bit where he's like, no, I'm not going. I'm black. There is no point in time you can send me. And then there's another field guy. They're basically they're this field team, but it seems like there's some conspiracy stuff that's going on. Like maybe that Abigail Spencer's character is like maybe working for the bad guys in the future, and that they're maybe not the bad guys. Uh-huh. And there's agenda going on. But the thing that has me interested beyond the interesting sort of trailer is this is Eric Kripke, who co-created Supernatural, and Sean Ryan, who did The Shield.
Yeah.
It's a pretty strong foundation there.
So I am curious to see about that. Those are the three shows I'm looking forward to.
You know what's weird, Randy? That sounds like if you took the card game Chrononauts and built something out of it in the same way that they did something imaginative with Clue, the board game, and turned it into a legitimately interesting and fun movie.
Yeah, I can see that.
I mean, some of those are the ones I wanted to see the most. I mean, Timeless definitely ranks up there. I have a weird kind of wanting to see Designated Survivor.
I'm curious about that one, too. That's ABC.
It's ABC. It's Kiefer Sutherland. It's about sort of he's... I don't know who he actually is.
He is the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development.
Right. And it's all about the sort of notion of one person stays behind just in case to keep the government running if some disaster attack.
When they do the State of the Union.
When they do the
State of the Union, they gather everybody together except for the designated survivor who goes to an undisclosed location.
Uh-huh.
And basically, it's a ceremonial thing. Nobody expects anything to happen. He's just watching TV and talking to his family and that kind of thing.
Yeah. He looks like an average ordinary guy as much as Kiefer Sutherland can do that.
He's also on the outs. Like, he was about to get fired.
Right. And, of course, you know,
Something happens
and he has to step up. I think it's an interesting premise for a show.
County or drama?
Definitely drama. Probably okay. A little bit of suspense.
Because I can really see this played for comedy.
Yeah,
too.
Sure.
There's a comedy that I'm looking forward to. I don't know if it's going to pan out.
Oh, you didn't mention those. Designated Survivor, in addition to having Kiefer Sutherland as the president, positive by accident,
yeah.
Cal Penn, who actually worked in the Obama White House,
yes.
Is like his speechwriter. And there's an FBI agent played by, and I'm blanking on who it's playing, looking into the case. And she's a good actress, too, and I'm forgetting who it is.
But it's got some good people in there, so I'm hopeful.
Yeah.
The comedy that I think could be funny or could be bad is Speechless.
Oh, man, I'm so worried about this.
But I like Minnie Driver. And I love Minnie Driver. And I like the sort of quirky comedy nature of it.
Yeah.
And sort of about her family and her specifically her son who has...
Her son's in a wheelchair and can't speak.
Right. So, but it looks funny. Minnie Driver
sounds funny.
No,
no, it's definitely not played for comedy. Though.
Yeah, it's definitely played for comedy.
She's like the terror mom. She's so advocate for a kid that she's been kicked out of like six schools because she's such an advocate that she makes trouble.
Yeah, she's crazy over the top.
This is about her going to a new school and her other son feeling sort of overlooked because she spends so much time making sure that her son in the wheelchair gets all her attention.
That's interesting. Is it going to use comedy to sort of actually look at like sort of issues of you know parenting and special needs? Kid or something.
You know how Friends and a lot of those shows sitcoms do the sort of lessons at the end, that kind of thing.
Right.
This is going to have that. It's got that sort of sweet core to it. Modern Family does it a lot too.
Right.
Yeah.
It looks a little over the top to me. Like it's going to be clumsy.
I hope not. I hope it sort of falls in sort of the same vein as Modern Family because Modern Family at its best was great.
That's true. Absolutely.
And then the other one that's just sort of a show that was at the bottom of my list, and I've heard some rocky reviews of it, but Pitch for Fox.
Oh, have you heard reviews? That one looks interesting.
It looks interesting to me. It's about the first female Major League Baseball player, and she's a pitcher. And I think just in concept, that sounds interesting.
It's about all the pressures on her. It's about her relationship with her father, who sort of taught her how to throw the ball. It's about sort of a woman in the major leagues. And the coach is, was he the dad on Wonder Years? Is that who I'm thinking? Or is it somebody else?
Oh, it might be. I forget his name.
But dad on Wonder Years was a really memorable character.
Yeah, he's great. I think it's him. It looks very slick. Fox is really good at slick.
Yeah.
And it again, it could be over the top, you know, but they pitch it. Their description is a true story that's about to happen or something like that. They're definitely sort of going on the, this is going to happen and this is how it might go down. It's an interesting show that has a very interesting point to make.
Yeah.
I don't know if the show is going to be there, but yeah, I'd like it to be because the trailer is interesting.
Yeah. I wonder how far they can do that with the show. How far they can go with that premise.
Well, by the second episode, she will have teamed up with Lucifer to fight crime in L.A.
Did Lucifer get renewed for a second
season? Yes, it did. And that's one thing I do have to say for Pitch that I like, and for Designated Survivor. It's not about fighting crime.
No, it's not.
And I'm so tired of every premise has got to be two cops or a cop and a consultant teaming up to fight crime.
You're talking about Lethal Weapon, right?
I'm not talking about Lethal Weapon. Lethal Weapon, I think, is going to be an utterly forgettable but entertaining.
Yeah.
It's going to be like Lethal Weapon 3 and 4.
Yeah.
I mean, not going to be like Lethal Weapon.
Some channels just make shows with their formula that they've made shows forever. I mean, CBS is going to be making Bull, the new Michael Weatherly show.
Yeah.
I'm going to check it out because I like Michael Weatherly.
Sure.
But I don't expect anything insane from it.
I don't know who Michael Weatherly is.
He was the guy in the wheelchair in Dark Angel.
I've forgotten that, again, even though you told me already.
I know. He's very forgettable.
Dave, what are you looking to for in the fall? You going to watch maybe Game of Thrones Season 4?
Continue.
I think you might watch Westworld.
If it stumbles across my... I mean, I don't have cable or anything.
I know, but if...
I don't have cable.
Plenty of friends who have HBO and everything.
I don't go over to other places to watch TV.
Dave is one of them readers.
Actually, I have an interest in seeing Westworld, but I don't watch TV.
Nick, finally, I understand that you became British recently.
I did. I went through 6 seasons of British Downton Abbey.
Yes, that makes you British.
It does. I got an honorary British certificate.
Yep.
Signed by Judy Dench. It wasn't. It's actually by Maggie Smith.
They give you a monocle and a cane.
Okay, that's good. No.
Right, out of curiosity, before Nick continues, have you watched Downton Abbey?
Nope.
And I don't know if you would particularly enjoy it.
I believe that it is one of these good shows that is not for me.
Right, and it's basically a soap opera in a lot of ways. It kind of, no, like, crazy... Like some of the crazier stories that soap operas come up with, like evil twins and things like that.
Right.
But it's
a melodrama.
It's a melodrama.
Character-based melodrama.
It is a cop show about Downton and Abbey, two hard-boiled cops.
I mean, that would be the Rogues Gallery version of it.
There are very good shows you could kind of describe that way. In some way, sometimes Breaking Bad was a soap opera.
Yeah.
But it was a super smart soap opera.
I don't mean
opera.
That to be like derogatory towards Downton Abbey, right. Because I think it is an insanely
well-made...
Well,
I mentioned
that
because I believe you do not mean it as a soap opera, yeah, in the sense of like trashy daytime TV.
No, because it is extremely well-made. All the actors in it, I mean, you have Maggie Smith, and then just a plethora of people that put in fantastic performances, sort of portraying the kind of class warfare in a lot of ways... Servant versus rich socialite, and sort of the world that they both live in,
like
and
the,
then sort of the crossover.
1910s and 20s.
It
I don't
actually
know how
goes
far
through.
Along
it goes through like the early 1900s to 1925. So it actually goes through First World War,
uh-huh.
And how they basically have to turn the Abbey into sort of a hospital
like
in a lot of ways. They have another term for it, and I'm blanking on it, but
sick house.
I mean, that they've referenced that, but there's another term that I'm forgetting.
Probably rhymes with something, Crazy Brits.
I'm sure. And doing that, but it also... so it's interesting...
The medicinal loo. Sorry.
No, it's interesting to see sort of real-world history sort of mapped on to this. It gives a sort of good grounding in a lot of ways. And you do kind
There's
of,
also a sense of humor on in this show, right?
There is. There's. I mean, oh yeah, I laughed out loud because the writing
I would
is
imagine,
so crisp.
From what I've seen of it, like, dryly British would be a lot of it.
Yeah, it is. And just some of the snobbish jokes and things
right.
like that, because, you know, there's sort of the old world or an old guard, like people like Maggie Smith and sort of the Lord Grantham, who is kind of stuck up and a little
have no concept of normal life.
No concept of normal life and don't feel the desire to change with the times.
Right.
And they're sort of stuck in their ways of wanting this big house and wanting all the people serving and sort of, because that's how they grew up. That's how they do. They don't want to change. And slowly but surely, and that's sort of the character arc for the entire show, is learning to move on when you have to, or you kind of get kind of run over by history.
Right, even if you're one of these, like, these yeah. British person mired in their sort of empire history.
But then you also get sort of the romantic endeavors of the people, of not only the socialites, but also the working class, the people underneath them. And I found it very intriguing, but I also have a lot of fun with the... And what I compare it to is the movie Gosford Park by Robert Altman.
As soon as I heard the premise for Downton Abbey, I was like, that sounds a lot like Gosford Park.
Gosford Park had sort of the murder mystery attached to it.
But that was like weirdly low level as far as its importance in the movie. Correct. It was just kind of percolating in the background.
You know, what's interesting is you talk about it, and I remember this was very critically acclaimed, won a lot of Emmys.
Yeah.
And the sort of the span of time, what it reminds me of more than anything else, is Mad Men. Which also was sort of a drama soap opera, but was sort of at the highest level execution.
Yeah.
And was about, instead of being about like the turn of the century, it was about the 60s. But it sounds like it maybe have something in common with that as far as like following a bunch of characters through that.
Yeah, and I need to approach Mad Men differently than what I have in the past. Because I've attempted that show twice.
Yeah.
And the first time I had no clue what I was getting into. Yeah. I wasn't quite sure. I hit a wall.
I think you need to view Mad Men. It sounds like you need to view it basically like Downton Abbey. It is about a series of characters and following them as the times change around them.
Yeah, because the people involved in Mad Men are, I mean, John Hamm, a bunch, all of them are amazing people. Yeah. So,
Nick, favorite characters on Downton Abbey? Like just a handful.
There is a character named Tom who was started out as a chauffeur and then married one of the Lord's daughters.
What scandal?
Spoilers.
Yes, it was. It actually it was a huge scandal. He was probably my favorite character on the show because he was sort of a lot of times the voice of reason and also the voice of change. Mm-hmm. He was very much critical of all sort of like the politics involved in that society and sort of more of. It wasn't touting socialism in a lot of ways, but some of it.
Right, sure.
But no, he was definitely my favorite.
Okay.
And what about my pitch for a sequel, Downton Abbey 2125?
I'm for it.
the when the robo servants break down and they're like, "Well, what do we do now?"
Okay, so let's talk Halloween costumes.
Okay.
Dave,
I don't do Halloween costumes.
But you're doing a costume.
The dramatic pause there, Randy. That mostly I don't. But this year, I found myself watching the Gotham, which we've talked about in a few episodes past. And as I was watching it, I was like, you know what? I can pull off this Harvey Bullock.
Yep.
And I was like, he's even kind of cool. He's not a big old super slob. Like he's a little slovenly, but he's not the super slob of the cartoon and comics. So I won't even feel like I'm a big old doofus.
Full circle here, just as an aside, Donald Logue plays Bullock on Gotham.
Right, and on a show which I heard Randy liked okay.
Yes.
Terriers.
He was the lead in Terriers.
Yep. If I'm not mistaken, you might have even met Donald Logue recently.
I talked to him. I was actually just checking my email to see if he'd emailed me, because I asked him, hey, you know that hat you wear on Gotham?
Yeah.
What's that hat called?
Yeah. It's crazy that to be living in that world where
Randy could just email
the guy I'm cosplaying as has been interviewed with by my friend. So also by the way, on a cosplay level, I don't have the Superman physique, and so a superhero type costume was not. There weren't a lot that were jumping out at me. But, Bullock on the show is defined as looking kind of like an old-school detective. He's got, like, you know, sort of dress shirt and slacks, but he wears this kind of, like, black leather jacket that's like a 70s jacket, you know, kind of slightly longer cut, you know, past the waist.
Yep.
That, it makes him look like he's a crook cop.
Yep.
and he wears a hat, like a fedora-type hat. And the danger is that you don't want to look like too much like Indiana Jones, because...
Right.
At its basics, it's pretty close. He's even got, like, the scruffy beard, 5 o'clock shadow, which I've been growing for the last month.
Yep. And then you get the thing where, like, when my wife and I early on went as the Men in Black, every time we walked on 6th Street, they were like, oh, look, insurance agents. And I'm like, we got guns.
Yeah. Yeah, that's we'll see if it comes off. I've got all the stuff in place, and hopefully the badge clipped on the belt will kind of sell the notion. Or if not, I'll torture a perp until they talk.
Yeah,
and no, that's not Indiana Jones.
He doesn't torture perps.
but yeah, I ordered
Nazis.
This one was semi pricey, and that I ended up buying a hat, and I ended up buying the jacket. And
is the jacket functional as well, though? It's like,
yeah, like it's actually like a pretty nice jacket. Nice. So I expect to get use out of it. And I honestly, the hat's pretty nice too. And it got delivered faster than I thought. I didn't end up making the trip to South Austin. I ordered it through Amazon, and ended up happy with the results.
Nice.
So hopefully I will be taking this on a test drive for Wizard World this weekend on Saturday, and then if it works out well, I'm sure I'll be wearing it off and on throughout Halloween type times.
So if you see him at Wizard World, make sure and say, "Hey, Bullock, think about the future."
Actually, you need to be like you need to do an Indiana Jones type of riff.
Nick, are you doing costume?
I'm not. Just too many other things were happening in my life.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, just craziness.
I am thinking about it this year. I haven't gotten around to it. It's one of those things where I may run every year. I'll run out of time, but I am. There's a cosplay site that has
two possibilities
Overwatch
that
stuff.
I thought were interesting.
Yeah. Well, Overwatch. I'm thinking in Overwatch. There's two possibilities there for one thing, and that was either Reaper or Soldier 76, both of whom I play and can reasonably. Again, I also do not have a superhero physique, but Overwatch is a cloak, and Soldier 76 is a bunch of jackets and padding, so I could make that work.
I think I could pull off a Roadhog.
You could totally pull off a Roadhog.
And then, like, if people are confused, you just run around and shoot them.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
This is Texas, you can do that. And the other thing
Reaper does sound pretty elaborate.
Yeah, somewhat.
And Soldier 76 to some degree, too.
But they're both a consideration. If I want to do it, I need to get measured and send it off and see if I can get it sent back to me in time. But if I don't do that, the other possibility we were talking about was our beloved mascot, Maximilian Larch.
Yep, the store rogue.
Which turns out you can do with a red suit, which I thought would be hard to find. No, I went to Amazon. It's like you search for red business suit. It comes right up.
Oh, wow.
And I basically get a red suit, a red fedora to go with it, and a yellow and black striped tie.
Eye patch.
And an eye patch, and handcuffs to go with.
Right.
All of which are easily achievable.
Yeah, that's true.
So I was like, oh, maybe I'll do this. And I may do that anyway for some, like, some store event or something.
Be pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I feel like we should have that hanging up in the, like, sort of, like, the Batcave.
We need to get an Arrow-style dummy and put it on there.
I think so.
Yeah. If only we had tons of room, like an Arrow cave.
We can hang that from the ceiling.
Time to start digging.
All right. I think that brings us to a close for the week. So that's it for us, and we will be back next week. And until next time,
Yo, Joe.
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating or review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.